Okay, Harry, you sound like me. I still have my original 8086 IBM clone from the 80s. Still have it. We'll never let go of it. Take it to my grave. Not really. Anyway, can't let go of that computer. That was the first one I ever got. Green screen. Anyway, hope you investigate one of those and report back to us what you think about it. Let's see if John got back. KM4RJN, are you back? Call W4DJW in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Okay, hope that wasn't something serious. We're going to go ahead and let's see if we've got any other stations that would like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Call W4DJW. Okay, none at this time, so we're going to go ahead to the next rag tour. That is KM4DDU. That's Tom over here in Greer. Tom, it's your turn. Call W4DJW in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net.
Net control. DDU. I got two things to talk about, please. Number one, I tried to talk to y'all last week when I got a new mobile radio and wasn't able to check in with it. I'm now checking in with it, and I wanted to thank whoever it was who helped me with the radio check on Saturday out there. I didn't get the call sign, but I wanted to thank them. I also wanted, if you wouldn't mind, just give me a minute, and I'm going to switch from 10 watts to 25 watts, see if that makes any difference to my clarity.
Okay, Tom, well, it sounds like you're sitting in the chair right next to me right now, so I can't imagine how it could get any better, but your 10 watts is doing as if we were sitting in the same room talking, but go ahead and bump it up. Okay, so you doubled with John. John is back, so it sounded really bad while you were doubling. But go ahead and do that again this time, and we'll give you a better report on how that sounds. And John, we'll be back to you in just a minute.
John, sorry about that. This is Tom, KM4DDU, on my higher power setting. Just looking for a signal check.
It sounds exactly the same as it did on 10 watts. Just as good. you can't improve on perfection, John. Sounds great. Or Tom. I said John. I meant Tom. So, sounds good. All right. We'll go back to John, who is back. KM4RJN. John, I hope that wasn't too serious. Called W4DJW in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net.
Well, I heard some banging that sounded like somebody bouncing down steps. And the dog went crazy. And I went upstairs, and Karen says, "What?" And I said, "Was that you?" She said, "No." I said, "It almost sounded like the washing machine was off balance or something." And I couldn't figure it out. So the dog kept going crazy. So I put her on a leash, turned on the lights, went outside. My neighbor out back had offered to change out the blades on the lawnmower. And he was going to do it tomorrow. And then he realized he's going to the beach tomorrow. So he went ahead and did it. And what he was doing, he was banging on my back door back here. And nobody ever bangs on the back door back here. Why the dog was barking at the steps, I don't know. But anyway, so I caught him and I had to go put the lawnmower away. But so that's all it was. I thought maybe there was a bear out there banging on something, but where my wife had fallen down the steps or the washing machine was walking across the floor or something. I didn't made a heck of a noise, and the dog barked at the steps. She's laying right by the back door. But instead of barking at the back door, she was barking at the steps. And I'm going, what's the matter with this dog? And so anyway, so that's what that was.
She's trying to get your attention. Tell you, come up here and look what's going on up here.
The house is on a slope, so the basement opens out in at ground level on this back side, and I've got a door back there. And she's laying right in front of that door, and that's the door he was banging on. So she's barking at the steps on the far side of the basement. And that's what threw me. You know, if she'd barked at the door, I'd open the door. But, you know, so anyway. I got my Raspberry up and running, and I put the PL tone on my radio. That helped a little bit. There's still a little bit of annoying whine. And the Raspberry's sitting on my desk, and my antenna is hanging from the ceiling fan. So I moved the Raspberry down to the floor, which puts my desk between it and the antenna. And there's just a little bit of a whine when the thing's on, but other than that, I think that solved the problem. I'm going to have to do some rearranging here, I think.
Okay, well, that makes more sense now that you mentioned that the antenna is in the same room with you. So there is a field of energy around equipment that does generate RF, and most electronic equipment does generate a little bit of RF. So now that I recall, or you told me, that that antenna is hanging from the ceiling fan, that would put that Raspberry Pi very close to that antenna instead of like mine the antenna's outside, right? It's outside and it's up above the top of the roof. So that's starting to make more sense now. But it sounds like you've got a solution. Could wrap the Raspberry Pi in aluminum foil, but you probably don't want to do that. But did you catch that the Rosetta work units have been depleted? Hope it's temporary, but if you go to their site and you look on their main page, it says the work queue has zero units in it. So whatever you're crunching on now is it until they generate some more work units.
To my one laptop, and it said it didn't have any work units, but my other one is, in fact, running a Rosetta. I'm running an Einstein, too, but it's also running a Rosetta. It was still doing some work units, I guess, that I haven't finished or whatever. It may not have any new ones. So I set my other one to go for Einstein, and my desk is, I'm going to have to do some serious rearranging here. I've got a 31-inch flat-screen TV using as the monitor for the Pi, and then I've got my laptop, and then I've got my other big monitor hooked to my laptop, so I've got three monitors sitting on my desk, and my big screen TV across the room watching TV, and a laptop up in the window running Einstein, and I've got two mice, two remotes, because I need a remote to turn on this small TV, and my remote from other TV, and every time I want to change something, I wind up on my cell phone, so it's like, yeah, I'm going to have to do some rearranging here.
Well, I had to do that same thing. I had fans and Raspberry Pis all around my desk, and Amy would come in here, and she'd say, oh, it's too hot in here, I can't stay in here, and she'd leave. So I did what Glenn did, and banished the Raspberry Pis from the office. Now they are in the bonus room. And they're in there just, and I've got the fans turned wide open there because it doesn't matter. There's nobody in there to hear them. So they're running as cool as they can be, and they're happy. And the server that serves all of them, because they're all on NFS mounts, they don't have any hard drive or any SD card or anything like that in them. But so they've got a server that's in there with them too, and they're all in there generating heat. So you walk into the bonus room now and it's hot. Everywhere else in the house is cool, but you walk in there and it's pretty hot. But nobody ever goes in there anyway. So that worked out okay. But I imagine now it's pretty cool over there because they're all running out of work units.
Excuse me, I moved the Pi down to the floor. I've got a bookshelf that I use for a credenza. And I put it down on the floor and slipped it underneath into the little kick pad place there underneath the thing, and pointed the SD card at it, and that seems to have eliminated the interference. If I were to pick it up and put it back on the desk, it would start messing with the radio again, and it only messes with this repeater. I rolled through all the other channels and repeaters that I had and doesn't touch one of them, but it seems to like this one.
Well, if you were to have a spectrum analyzer in front of you and you were looking at the whole 2-meter band, you would probably see when you turn it on a whole bunch of spikes come up in that general or across the band. Or it could be contained to one side or the other side, but it just so happens that one of those spikes is lined up on our input frequency.
Sid's repeater is the one Sid runs his net on. That's just a couple of clicks away from us, and isn't it?
It is, but it doesn't take much. I don't know if you've ever run software-defined radios, but they have that spectrum scope, and you can see. And I've looked over there on mine a lot, and I see all kinds of equipment, like little wall warts. I went around one day, and I pulled most of the wall warts out of the wall, cut the pigtail off of them, the ones that were 12 volts, and plugged them into the shack 12 volts. Put a little power pole connector on the end of it, plugged it into the shack 12 volts, and then chunked the wall wart over in a drawer, and the tons of spikes that I had in the room just went down. They just flatlined. Those little things generate a lot of noise, too. It could be that wall wart. Well, you're saying moving the Pi around helps it, so it might not be that. But those things are notorious for generating RF noise.
I would banish mine to someplace else, except I haven't got a long enough cable to get it there. But then the kit that my daughter got me. It's got the little on-off switch, so I can, when I want to turn it off, I can just reach down and hit the little switch. But I was going to just use this for my laptop, and I might still, but I've got to get a bunch of stuff on this thing, do that, and then I can put my laptop somewhere else and get a few of these screens off my desk. I've got more screens on my desk than I can shake a stick at.
Yeah, desktop real estate does become very important when you get a lot of stuff like that running, especially if you start doing digital ham radio, then you're really going to run out because they've got like 15 windows all to themselves.
Step at a time, brother, one step at a time. But anyway, I was trying to get the net control software on this thing, and I'm not sure exactly. I downloaded it and tried to extract it, and it said, what do you want to extract it with? And I thought, I don't know, I have no idea.
The net control software onto the Raspberry Pi? Is that what you're talking about? Yeah, that's not going to run on the Raspberry Pi for two reasons. One is the Raspberry Pi uses ARM architecture, not x86. Your PC that runs Windows runs the x86 architecture. So that's one language, one binary language that the x86 instruction set is interpreted by that CPU. The CPU on the Raspberry Pi is ARM architecture, totally different language, right? They don't. You, if you have a C program, the source code, you can compile it for each of them, and they'll run their own executable version, but they won't cross over. And that's one reason they won't run over there. The other reason is that has embedded MFC, Microsoft Foundation classes, which you won't find in Unix. That's a Unix operating system on the Pi. That's a Windows operating system your net control software is running in. There's no screen handling library in Unix that emulates the screen handling library in Microsoft Foundation class. So because of the operating system, it's not compatible, and because of the CPU, it's not compatible.
It's unhandy, but anyway. So I got to keep my laptop over here if I'm going to keep my net software.
Well, that's not to say that it's not reproducible in another language. Like, there's a Qt windowing library for Unix. We could rebuild that whole thing in Qt and have a Qt instance of it. That's why once you get into digital ham radio, you'll notice the windows look very different. They're not the same kind of windows that you see in Microsoft Windows. And that's because they are cross-compiler. You can put Qt on a Unix machine like the Raspberry Pi running an ARM architecture and compile your Windows program, and you can also move that same source code over to a Windows computer, a Microsoft Windows computer, and compile it on Qt, and it'll run on both of them. But it takes into account the differences. Microsoft never did that. Microsoft just assumed everybody would always be running in Windows, so they never ported it and made it so that it would work in both. Now, there is this .NET feature they woke up after about 20 years and decided, you know, it might be wise to do that. So there is this .NET component of Microsoft that can do something similar to that. I don't know how good it is, though. I've never used it. W4DJW in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net.
I might look into that, but in any event, the thing's up and running. I'm kind of exploring the Pi here a little bit and seeing what all's in there and what all she can do. But it's got some really pretty screensavers. My laptop now is running Einstein. Both of them are running Einstein. I might have finished up on the last of the things I had going on Rosetta. But in any event. Well, it was good chatting with you, and I may chat with you some more. If you decide to rebuild that control software to run on a Pi, let me know.
Okay, John. Well, we do appreciate you hanging around for the rag chew portion. That would be a lot of effort. I put about a year into building that thing about 15 years ago. I was looking at the date timestamp on the original source code the other day, and it was about 15 years ago. I thought it was 10, but man, time flies. Anyway, I don't know that I'm willing to put another year into developing something like that again in another platform, but it might be easier since I've already got a lot of source code that I could port over. Anyway, appreciate you hanging around for the Rag Chew portion of the net. We'll go ahead and see if we've got any other stations all the way through the alphabet that would like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Call W4DJW.
Okay, W. Whiskey 4, Tango, Sierra. Jim, I'm down at Fair Play. I don't know if you heard me. I was sitting under the canopy at the fuel island at the Loves a while ago. I couldn't hear you over all the noise there. I didn't know if you heard me or not.
We got you checked in direct on RF, Jim. Yeah, and it sounded good from under the canopy. Yeah, and I imagine that was a metal canopy. But it was still, that signal was bouncing off of something, and it was making its way up to the mountaintop. And we got you in. Sounded good on RF. That's a rare opportunity that we get to hear you on RF, Jim.
Went over to, got it delivered at Spartanburg, but I can't remember now where I'm going, to be honest with you. But anyhow, got to be there at 9 o'clock. The bad news is I-85 northbound shut down at the 14-mile marker, both lanes. So I'll be spending the night Fair Play and trying to make it over there on time in the morning.
So do you have an alternate route that you can use to get around the blockage? Do you have a GPS that'll help you find a path to get around the blockage?
GPS, but this load was supposed to have been loaded at noon. I didn't get released till almost 7 o'clock tonight. I don't have the time to do it. I mean, if I do an alternate around it or anything, I'm better off sitting here. I can leave here with 20 spare minutes in the morning. And if everybody will just color between the lines and wash their hands like they're supposed to, I'll get over there on time.
Okay, well, good luck with that. I know that's frustrating as it can be. I used to have to go to Charlotte every day. And when that would happen, and it seemed like it wasn't that long ago they were doing that. It just seems like they're always working on that road. But anyway, we wish you the best of luck, Jim.
Now that road work's not the problem. There's an accident up there. There's a bunch of accidents on 85 South before you get going towards Atlanta, and then I think there's on the outer loop on the west side, there's three trucks involved in an accident over there, and about another half a dozen cars. And it's pretty much like demolition derby night tonight.
Well, keep it cool. Don't let it bother you. There will be another day, another time. I know that's one thing I had to keep telling myself on 85 all the time, is just relax. Some days I would leave Charlotte, and it would be bumper to bumper leaving Charlotte, and I would arrive in Greenville, and it would have been bumper to bumper the whole way home, a whole hour and a half to 2 hours, bumper to bumper. That is just nerve-wracking traffic, so I understand your frustration, but take care. Be careful out there.
Have a good night. KW4TS, clear.
You too, Jim. Any other stations all the way through the alphabet that would like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, call W4DJW. Okay, we've got one more rag chewer this evening, N4DIZ, Joel over in Greenville. It's your turn. Call W4DJW in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Okay, I fear we may have taken too much time. Joel may have gone ahead and checked out on us this evening. Any other stations all the way through the alphabet would like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, call W4DJW.
And I don't key up just right sometimes.
Okay, well, you're in there now, Joel. Go right ahead.
Okay, can you tell us who the CLW is going to be held?
Say that again and move the mic just a little bit further away from you because it sounds kind of distorted.
Sounds better. This is a new radio I'm using, by the way. It's new to me. And I got to get used to it. I hope that's better. And I was wondering where the field day is going to be held. Over.
Okay, yeah, that is a whole lot better, by the way. That is very clear now. So keep that distance. And we'll see if Bob is in here. K4RHF. Bob, you still there? Okay, Joel, he's not here at the moment, but he normally makes that announcement. It is the same place that they had it last year, so did you go last year?
We get over there, but they had it last year at the YMCA in Traveler's Rest. Does that sound about right, maybe?
I remember them referencing that, so yeah, that does sound about right if you've been there before. Go ahead.
K4OSH, the location for the field day is Riverbend Park. It's off Old White Horse Road, kind of behind Furman, across from Furman. It's off Old White Horse, not 25 White Horse, but it's Riverbend. It's a horse park. If you look it up on the internet, I think it'll give you some directions. I may have the address here somewhere. I'll look right quick. Hope that helps some.
Does that give you the information you need, Joel?
Roger, it certainly does. That's within about a mile of where I live, so I know exactly where Riverbend Equestrian Park is. That's no problem. So I appreciate that. And, of course, the second thing I was going to say, and you corrected me on that, this is a radio that a friend brought me to use. It's an ICOM 706, and it does about everything that a radio can do. I like the 2-meter part because now I can take my mobile 2-meter radio and put it in my van, and which I've been wanting to do. And I was listening to you and that gentleman talk about computers. Is that the kind of work you do, is computer work? Because I don't know anything about computers.
That is correct. And Pat, thank you very much for jumping in there and giving us that information, because Joel lived right around that area, as you heard him say, and appreciate you jumping in there and helping us get that cleared up. And that's affirmative, Joel. That's what I do for a living. I've been doing that since the 80s, and did that for Michelin Tire back in the 80s, and went out during the dot-com boom contracting and settled in the financial systems since then. But it's been a hobby the whole time. I enjoy keeping work computers separate from hobby computers, and they have these things called distributed computing programs that allow a whole lot of computers to work as one big huge computer, and they call that distributed computing. And they give out work units to all those computers, and all of them go and process those work units and turn them back in, and they give each individual credits for the work that they did, plus computer operators join together in groups and form teams, and then the teams compete with other teams, and that makes it kind of fun. It's kind of fun and interesting. It's kind of like ham radio, but for computers, or kind of like flying radio control airplanes, where people get together, like-minded people doing like stuff that they like, just sharing and camaraderie between the different people that enjoy the same kind of thing.
Roger. Okay. Well, it's about my bedtime, and I will say 73s, Dave, and everyone that's listening, W4DJW, this is N4DIZ, I'll be clear.
Okay, Joel, well, we appreciate you hanging around. That radio is doing really good. That mic is very sensitive. You don't have to talk very loud into it at all. It is very sensitive, sounds very, very clear. When you backed it off just a little bit, sounds really good. I think you're going to enjoy that one. You don't have to work hard to use it, and it sounds really good. Appreciate you being with us tonight. Are there any other stations all the way through the alphabet that would like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net? Call W4DJW. Go ahead, Kevin.
That place is 175 Riverbend Road, Greenville, is where it's going to be at. And got a question. I heard y'all talking about the Raspberry Pis. What is that? Is that another digital mode for radio?
Raspberry Pi is something that got started in the UK. They decided to build a full computer on a PC board the size of a credit card. So it's an operating, I mean, it's not an operating, it's, they've got a CPU, a system on a chip, SOC, CPU, that has everything. It has HDMI connectors for monitors, it has USB connectors for keyboard and mice, it has an SD card slot for putting an operating system on it. So it's like having a full-blown computer on a credit card. And it has all the jacks and everything you need to plug in, all the peripherals so that you get your monitors, your keyboard, your mouse, and it works just like a full-scale computer, but it's the size of a credit card. Now, they started it over in the UK a few years back, like, I don't know how many years, a bunch, and it has exploded. They've sold millions and millions and millions of those things. Has nothing to do with ham radio, but since it's a computer, there's a lot of things for ham radio that you can run on it. So, and it costs $75, and the whole, well, that's for the most expensive one. The most expensive is $75, the least expensive is about $4, and they range in performance from about $4 up to $75 worth of performance that you can get out of them. That's that wide of a range. The ones that sell for $75 can run about as good as a computer laptop that costs probably $800. They can do about as much work. They don't run Windows. Well, you could put Windows on them, but it's a waste to put Windows on them. People do that. But most of them run Unix, a flavor of Unix called Raspbian. And now that it's out there, and it's been out there for a while, Kevin, there are competitors. There are other people that are building Raspberry Pi clones, and they're building like Rock Pi 64. There's a whole bunch of other things out there, too, that are... They're seeing how successful that company was at building a single board computer. They call them SBC. And they're seeing how successful they are. So now they're building them too. It was meant originally to be an entry point for students to learn how to program, to write software for computers. But it broke that price barrier that students don't have the money to go out and spend $800 or $1,000 on computers left and right to be able to get into that kind of learning. So they can spend $75 and get the best, or they can spend $5 and get the entry point, and they can write software on it, and they can learn, they can get on the internet, they can browse the internet, they can look at source code, they can copy the source code, they can compile it, they can run it, and they can learn how to work computers and how computers work for a very low price entry point. That's what it started out as, but it has developed into a whole lot more than that now. Does that give you the information you were looking for, Kevin? You still there, Kevin? KN4UBG, W4DJW, you still there?
You're kicked out on you there, I think, or the radio timed out once. I got the point to where you were talking about the students could... download the codes and run different stuff on there, and about that time it cut out on you.
Okay, I timed my own radio out because the repeater's in repeater mode. It won't do that. It's in net mode, so it won't do that. So I timed my own radio out. Sorry about that. But yeah, that's what students use that as a low entry point to learn how to learn computers inside and out, how to write code on them, how to compile code, and how to run their code. And they have a entry point that is low enough that there won't be a price barrier to them being able to learn. Does that make sense?
What can you use them for? I mean, like you and the guy were talking about a while ago, he was running it. I mean, what does he use it for?
So there's a million things you can use them for. One of them is we're replacing the repeater's controller with a Raspberry Pi. So that's one thing you can do. There's software that's written that you can download and load on it, and it's control software. It's repeater control software, and you can configure it to do whatever you want it to do. And you can actually write code and expand it yourself. So that's one thing. You can do digital ham radio on them. You can open a spreadsheet and put numbers in there and have a spreadsheet that's running that does whatever spreadsheets do, right? Calculate a bunch of dates and times and costs and profits and return on investments. You can write a Word document on it and email it to somebody. You can do anything on there that you can do on any other computer. And there are just millions of things like that that you can do. But the reason that they originally created it was for learning. But now that they have expanded so much, it's got word processors, it's got PowerPoint presentations, this thing called LibreOffice. It's a whole lot like the Microsoft Office suite. You can read email, you can browse the internet, you can do video, you can create video, you can do photo editing. It's just, there's no way to name it all. Anything that you can do on any other computer, they've got software on those computers now that can do the same thing.
Well, can you use them for can you take and use them things to make your station remote stations, or you can use it to key up your station or anything like that?
Yeah, that's a Raspberry Pi. When you get on Echo Link, you're connecting to a Raspberry Pi, and it's running repeater software in simplex mode, and it's operating remote. So, yeah, you get on your phone, you log into Echo Link. Echo Link connects to that, and it goes up to the repeater and comes back. You can do the same thing. It's we're doing it every time you get on Echo Link. Yeah, before I started looking into repeater software, I was doing satellite ham radio, where you track the, you have two axes, and you track the satellite as it comes overhead. Satellite passover is only about 15 minutes if it passes directly over the top of you. If it passes over the horizon, if it's not right on top of you, but it's off to the side, you get about 5 minutes. So I was using two Raspberry Pis to control stepper motors that would download the path and look at what time it is and point the x-axis for the horizon, right, where in the horizontal plane the satellite was going to come over, and then track another one perpendicular to that that would track its elevation as it went up and over us, and it would just point right at the satellite the whole time it made its pass overhead. So, yeah, it can control your antenna to whatever precision you're willing to write the software to make it do that. And some people do have software that you can download, and you have to figure out how the software works with what piece of equipment, or you just make all of that stuff yourself. So it has the ability to do either or.
That's good to know. I mean, I've been hearing y'all talk about the Raspberry Pi, and I was always wondering, what it was capable of and all that stuff. So, I mean, that would be pretty cool. That'd be something to get and experiment with, That's something I want to try to get into, because like we were talking about that meeting that night that we all came to, Steve and all of us. And I've been thinking about, trying to make some type of rotor that, that rotates in one direction, but it rotates the beam in the other direction. Like, having multiple rotors or rotaries or whatever they're called. But that'd be pretty cool, though. I might look into that.
Yeah, that is. And if you want to know more about it than I could explain on Annette, then you can go to raspberrypi.org or just Google Raspberry Pi, and they'll take you to a site. And they refresh that site every day with hundreds of projects that people are doing. All right, and so you can go follow a project, and you can reproduce that project if you want. So if somebody's got something, I'm sure somebody has projects that they've uploaded there that are doing antenna rotors. For example, I had a CNC machine, so I cut my gears and my axes and my boxes that hold it all together and the holders for the stepper motors, just did all that on a CNC machine and then bolted it all together and then started writing the software for the Raspberry Pi. That was a fun project. I want to get back to that once I finish. But then I got off on this crunching for COVID-19, and that was just, it's kind of like ham radio. It's multifaceted. So, go out there and take a look at it on the internet and get an idea of what it is that you want to do, and then pick up the parts and go to town. Have fun with it. Anything else for us this evening, Kevin?
As far as I know, I'm going to have to stick around one afternoon for rag shoot. I've just been sitting out here in the swing in the yard listening, enjoying this crossband repeat. But, yeah, I'll pull that thing up online. I'll check it out. I might check it out tomorrow afternoon when I get home, pull it up on the computer and check it out and read up on it. That'd be pretty cool right there. I mean, if you're using it for that, you know, on the repeater, I mean, that tells me it can be used for that on the radio. So, yeah, just getting everything programmed and put in there to do what you wanted it to do. So, yeah, I mean, that explains a lot to me there. I mean, I appreciate it, and I'll let you get back to the net and closing everything out. And hopefully we'll holler at you sometime tomorrow. I might check in tomorrow afternoon. But you have a good one, 73. Good night, and we'll holler at you later. W4, DJ Duck, KN4, UBG, I'll be clear. Back to you.
Okay, Kevin. Well, I hope you enjoy that. That's a lot of fun. It's enough to keep me busy during this COVID-19 lockdown, and to where I don't even think about it because I've always got other things to work on, other things to do. Anyway, appreciate you hanging around. Any other stations all the way through the alphabet that would like to check out, check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, call W4DJW.
W4, Delta 4, Oscar, KNW, Whiskey, James and Anderson.
Okay, now control, I'd like to recognize KD4OTW. That's James and Anderson. Appreciate you taking the time to check in this evening, James. You're sounding good. Yeah, 100% readable that time. Have I missed anyone for comments, or have I missed any rag tours called W4DJW?
Yeah, KK4FTU.
KK4FTU, go right ahead.
Dave, it would be nice if all of the developers for software would go back to like it was when they first came out with computers and not be so wasteful with strokes and stuff, and have to where you didn't have to have so much memory and hard drive space.
You know, I've thought about that many, many times in the past, and the thing is that it's a mad rush, right? Developers build on what other developers have done in the past, kind of like with amateur radio when, you know, somebody first built a crystal radio, and then somebody built a heterodyne radio, and then somebody built another radio, and they take the learnings from the ones from the past, and they just keep building on top of, and on top of, and on top of. And somewhere way down there is the assembler code that somebody wrote many, many years ago that moves a pixel from one place that it's in right now to one place to the right of where it is right now. And that's still getting executed way down there in some library somewhere. To unwind all that 40 years of evolution and still be able to give you dialog boxes and scroll bars and buttons and menus and checkout carts and videos and all the stuff that you can do on a computer right now. We'd probably, if we did, you could do that, but by the time you got that done, you'd be 20 years behind it where all the other people were. So it's a vicious cycle. It's a never-ending vicious cycle. You got to keep up, and that's how they keep up.
That Microsoft and a few others have gone stupid lazy and eating up hard drive space and memory space, whereas Linux and some of the other ones do not.
Yeah, but what's amazing to me is the hardware people's ability to outrun them. Like, for example, I upgraded my computer not too long ago. And the other, I do that about every 5 or 6 years. So, and my oldest server is about 20 years old. The one that's still functional is about 20 years old. And I put a NVMe stick, non-volatile memory, using the PCIe slot. and it's like 3,000 times faster than the fastest spinning hard drive that there is out there. And when Windows boots up, it's like now. It's like you turn it on, it comes up, you see it go through the BIOS, and then boom, Windows is there immediately. So as bad as those developers keep piling stuff on top of stuff, those hardware guys can still outrun them. And I'm just amazed at that.
But they're able to do what they're able to do, I understand that. But for those that don't upgrade every time a new one comes out or every 5 years, you try to stay up with the latest system, you get slower and slower and slower boot up.
That is what, you're exactly right. That is exactly what prompted me to go ahead and upgrade, because I would log in. It's a, you know, I never reboot my computers. I never shut them off. They run 24/7, 365. But every now and then they force me. They do a forced shutdown, even though I don't want them to. And when they come up, the last time it was taking so long. And then when you open Outlook to get your email, it took so long. And you could just hear that hard drive crunch, 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 crunch. And I knew about the newer technology, so I decided I'm going to go ahead and get one with that. And if you wait 5 or 6 years, the reward for the wait is just, I mean, it's worth the wait. Because it's so, you recover all of that 5 years of frustration in an instant when you open that, when you log in the first time and you bring up the Outlook the first time. So patience has, it's a virtue. You spend all of that time waiting, all of that time, it builds up that anxiety for that day when you do that upgrade, and it's very rewarding.
But I have yet to be, find that the case with the operating systems. They get one that works good, and they try to go super crazy with all kinds of bells and whistles, and don't need to.
Well, that's the thing. They've got a huge market with millions and millions of consumers, so, and everybody's needs are different. So they're trying to meet, it's like an impossible task that they're trying to meet. So, yeah, I get just as frustrated as you do, right, when they do things like that and they're bad and it changes and it forces me to learn a new way to do it. I get that frustrated too. But the thing is, you either keep up or you get left behind, one or the other.
Increase in the Raspberry Pi sales would make somebody stop and think, hey, maybe we need to go keep it super simple instead of getting all crazy with it. Let it go back to you, Dave, KK4FTU, back to it.
Well, you make a very good point there, because one of the things I was scratching my head on is one of the things that they've done with this Rosetta software is they made it so that 8 work unit takes 8 hours to process, and the more folds you can make in 8 hours, the more points you get, or credits you get. And that's what it's all about. That's the reason people volunteer, is because they want to come up in the stats. Right? They want to see them outrun the guy that's in front of you, right? And then pass the guy that was in front of him. That's a lot of fun. That's a lot of motivation, a lot of incentive. Plus, you know you're doing something worthwhile, because it truly does help the scientists figure out how to beat this thing. But one of the things the Raspberry Pi does is it lets you get a lot of CPUs for a low investment, low cost. And if you get 100 of those CPUs crunching those work units, you can at a quarter of the cost of one of those big new servers, right? You can actually take a low investment and outrun a very expensive machine, because they're so, you get so many CPUs for such an extremely low cost, you can do better than the guys that have thousands and thousands of dollars invested in hardware, and you can outrun them with a very low investment, relatively speaking. So you're absolutely right. There is a lot to what you're saying, Richard. Anyway, appreciate that. Anyone else for comments or any other check-ins that I missed, call W4DJW. Okay, sounds like we got them all, and we do still need more NIC controllers. So if you're thinking about it and you're on the edge of the fence and you're ready to give me a call, send me an email, call me on the ham radio, and we'll get you signed up. Because if you don't, you're going to hear me like tomorrow night again. I'll be calling the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. So be sure and stop in tomorrow night. We'll do the same thing all over again. I'm going to go ahead and send in my net report. This is W4DJW now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net with our thanks for checking in. We'll now return the repeater back to normal amateur use. 73s and good night.